Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
We need to roll back the state. We spy on all of our own citizens.
Our prisons are flooded with nonviolent drug offenders.
If you want to know who America's next enemy is, look at who we're funding right now. Every single one of these problems are a result of government being way too big.
What's up, everybody? What's up? Happy almost Thanksgiving. Welcome to a brand new episode of Part of the Problem. You might be listening to this on Thanksgiving or after Thanksgiving, in which case I hope you had a good Thanksgiving. I have a great show for us tonight. My guest is somebody who has been requested by a lot of our listeners, so I'm very excited to have him in. Super smart guy, super interesting guy who does a ton of research and has a ton of information in his brain that he's going to share with our audience. It is, of course, Ryan Dawson. How are you, sir?
Howdy. Good intro there. I liked everything that was said there. It reminds me, for this cheap plug of this book I wrote called The Separation of Business and State. Everything, oh. All our problems are from too much government. That's basically what that book goes over.
Well, you are certainly preaching to the choir on that one. And of course, you have a show that you've had for a long time. It's the Anti-Neocon Report?
Yeah, the Anti-Neocon Report. Some people just say ANC for short. But
very good.
It doesn't get confused with the African National Congress too often.
Well, Anti-Neocon Report, Separation of Business and State, both sound pretty damn good to me. Because really, isn't that pretty much sums up all our problems, right? That's pretty much what's responsible for everything evil. The merger of business and the state and the goddamn neocons.
Yeah, I say it's the state has a reverse Midas touch. And then I say a lot of things about neocons. I don't know what I'm allowed to say on this or not, but none of it's good in that way.
You can say whatever you want to about the neocons. I mean,
I'm wearing this today.
End all aid to Israel. I'm with you on that one as well. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm all end all aid to anyone really, but yeah.
Well, I agree.
This aid gets used sometimes as a weapon and sometimes as a boon. Like with Israel, it's basically guaranteed loans, and it's an apartheid state where they shoot children in the balls and annex land and bulldoze houses. But other times, aid isn't really given. It's loaned as predatory loans to drive nations into inflating their currencies and so on. So you know all that anyway, but
absolutely,
yeah, I'm with the get rid of the aid.
No, well, absolutely, but there is something particular about the aid to Israel, which is not just that they're the largest receiver of American foreign aid, mm-hmm. but there's also something particularly distinct about the U.S.-Israeli relationship, where you know,
an interesting statistic in in the second DVD of is called Peace Propaganda: The Promised Land. Noam Chomsky, who I disagree with a lot of times, but you know he is not completely bad. He was going over some stats, and these might be dated, but Israel receives more foreign aid than the entire continent of Africa, 7 times more aid. Now, that's shocking because Egypt, for the longest time, got the second highest amount of aid, which is part of Africa. So Egypt plus all those other states times 7 is still less than what is given away to the Israelis, who do nothing but lie to us, steal from us, take tech from us, and now and then attack us.
Yeah, and even just to add on top of that, the aid that we give to Egypt is basically aid to Israel too, because the whole deal is you're going to be a friendly government to Israel. So and
for a long time it was the Mubarak, please look away, money. Yeah.
Yes, that's right. and it seems like I mean, we already had a little experiment just a few years ago in democracy in Egypt, and it seems like if they had their pick, they were not going to elect people who were big fans of Israel. So that is almost, you could almost count that
did
as
you
even
notice,
more
aid. As soon as the Suez Canal is reopened in that brief window of interim government, that suddenly all of Europe needed to invade Libya because they didn't want those boats selling oil east.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And of course, this is really the stuff that everything that you know, the kind of populist politics that I'm sure both of us don't love, you know, whether it's the kind of populist.
Well, the official line was the Egyptians are just angry at an internet video about whatever.
Oh, yes. No, well, that was
Hillary's Benghazi excuse.
But I'm talking about in the Western world, like the populist left, the populist right, the kind of AOCs, the Donald Trump, Steve Bannon's, all these movements in many ways, they're a result. Well, that's right. But all of these things rising up in so many ways is a result of the George W. Bush Obama foreign policy. I mean, this is and of course the financial crash of 2008. But you have the terrible economy, you have these wars that destabilize regions, and then the subsequent migrant
those are all related because the $1 trillion expenditures on these I call them imperial escapades. Mostly on behalf of foreign interests, by the way, because of huge pressure groups and lobbies. But those wars, like in Iraq, for example, we just sunk trillions of dollars. The reason that the Federal Reserve made interest rates so low was to finance these wars. Well, the result was, bled into the housing market, and we can talk about that forever. But, they put people on teaser rates and then raised the rate 17 times. And then, of course, the rating agencies were bribed, which is totally illegal. It's not a result of lack of regulation. It was fraud, which is already illegal, but nobody gets prosecuted at moral hazard. And so, yeah, I mean, the state just – the wars and also the high-cost universities, because they use universities as structured investment vehicles into defense industries. They go through hedge funds. And you can learn this by going through the divestment movement and seeing specifically who they're investing in. But the reason the state has guaranteed student loans isn't because they want college to be available for all or affordable for all. They made it unaffordable for all, so they do. They gave guaranteed student loans so that anybody can go at a really high borrowed rate, which colleges just raise the rates, right? Because the tuition money is reinvested in through defense company hedge funds for the wars. So ending the wars will actually help you reduce the costs of your schooling.
Wow. Wow. I didn't know that. That's news to me. That's really fascinating. But it is amazing how all of these things are so connected. And it's really all – it's like even if you're like some left-wing guy who really, really hates Donald Trump, you got to understand that what this is all about is the monetary system, which is all designed so that we can be the world empire, because there's no other way to do it. If you didn't have this fiat money system, if they weren't able to, as you were saying, artificially lower interest rates, there's no way we could have fought these wars on the credit card. And America was never going to put up with being taxed those trillions of dollars to fight the war in Iraq. I mean, that's when
if America didn't have to pay gold McCain.
Right.
You wouldn't have separated investment banks from the lending institutions, and there wouldn't have been so many subprime loans.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, but it takes maybe 6 minutes to explain it, you know, that it was never done on mass media. No, it's just too big to fail. And let's all repeat the line we were told from our boss. And, you know, and it still hasn't really been fleshed out. And the kind of anti-war left, which I think was more of an anti-Bush thing, The line that some of the genuinely, like, you know, for moral reasons wouldn't want to go to war is, oh, they lied about WMDs and it's all about oil or something. It wasn't about oil. Our oil imports from Iraq don't change from before and after the war. It's much deeper than that. They wanted to create sectarian violence between different religious groups and ethnic groups in Iraq on purpose and destabilize it. And we know this because it's written about in Israeli policy papers before the war begins.
Right. And also,
and all these lies about WMDs come from a clique of neocons who are all Israeli partisans.
Right. And I mean, we've got Dick Cheney on tape you know, from the first Persian Gulf War, telling you exactly,
yeah.
Right, telling you exactly what would happen if Saddam was toppled. I mean, it's not as if, like, nobody can claim this was a surprise. He actually, to give Dick Cheney some credit, which I rarely do, he called it perfectly. He told you exactly what was going to happen. So these guys knew what they were doing. The idea that this was
Cheney knew and Jim Baker knew, like, the kind of, I just call them the less dumb, because I'm not going to say any of them are smart, but compared to the Rumsfelds and Douglas Fifes, you know, Jim Baker and Cheney are certified geniuses. I like what Lawrence Wilkerson has. He has some of the best burns. Chief of Staff for Colin Powell. He was talking about Douglas Fife. If, for those who don't know, Douglas Fife was sort of the face of the Office of Special Plans, but it was really run by Richard Perle. But he said about Fife, he said, "Seldom in my life have I met a dumber man." He said it with all this politics. This is great. Guy's a true Muppet.
Well, yeah. What is it? So you one of the things that's interesting about the work that you do is that you've been very willing to go and talk to, you know, people on the alt-right, kind of jump into those conversations. As you told me when we were messaging before, you go, you're also very happy to talk to people on the far left, but they're not always so willing to have a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. They just want to scream with their fingers in their ear. Like, I will say about the alt-right, at least they want to have a dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, because they really think they're right and they're ready to talk to somebody. With the left, they just want to preach at you and no return, you know, no counter-argument. So.
Yeah, it's really, it's infuriating to even when the rare chance that you do get to talk to some of them, they're just, it's just like basically you either, it's purely religious. It's like you either agree with me or you have committed blasphemy and then you are, I mean, instead of, you know, working for the devil, you're racist or sexist or a Nazi or whatever their term
is. I think Hitler has replaced the devil as the epitome of evil.
Yeah.
Like, I think, I don't encourage any of this, but if you were to walk around with a sign outside saying something negative about God or praise the devil or something, and you had another one that said, like, I won't say it because this would get F the J's or something, you know, Nazi-ish, you would definitely, you go to prison, you would get killed probably, you know, like, I think that's more taboo than the religious stuff that is the real religion today.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think to me, from like the libertarian perspective, what it really kind of plays into is that there, to me, the like statism is kind of the religion, the idea that like the government has kind of replaced God, and World War II has become the great like origin myth of the modern U.S. empire. And so in order to justify that, everything has to be around, well, you couldn't possibly oppose World War II. It's also the biggest and the deadliest war ever, so you really need some mythology in order to justify it.
You saw a switch around. It wasn't really until the 70s where initially the war was blamed on Hitler's militarism. But then later, it's not Hitler's militarism. It's everyone else's isolationism that allowed him to do that. And so you're blamed on not going to war for the war, right? Not the Treaty of Versailles, World War One, or any of the real like nuanced causes. It's got to be, you know, some second grade answer. You know what I mean?
Right. Everything. It's like some weird Orwellian like up is down type thing. But even if you look at World War One, well, there's really no justification that holds the test of time that we should have been involved in World War One. Like, why would America need to go figure out what monarchs are going to win some European conflict? But what the kind
there's
of
a great, there's a great meme I love. It's like a soldier like going like this. I'm scratching my head if you can't see the video or you're listening, and it says so, and they're American soldiers. He's like so. Russian allied Serbians assassinated an Austrian so that Americans can be in France fighting the Germans or something.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's when if you actually just lay out the story, it's so absurd. You think no one, but the takeaway, the kind of Henry
like
Kissinger, and this is what Henry Kissinger wrote about in his book, is the takeaway is, well, look, the problem is we left. The problem is that after World War One, we didn't stay. We didn't have a NATO right away. We didn't take care of all the countries. We didn't have massive aid programs. That's the problem. And not the Treaty of Versailles. That's not the issue. The issue is that we weren't more involved in this treaty, so everything is right.
We didn't annex enough land. Yeah,
exactly.
And yet we have the Geneva Conventions to say not to annex land because Danzig and all that did lead to World War II. And they know that. And yet there's one country that continues to do it, and they get more aid from the United States than anyone else.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right.
It tends to be that when you annex land and destroy private property and houses and shoot people, that it pisses them off and they react to it. Imagine that.
And it's such a shame to me. It breaks my heart that now, what is it? It's about to be 2020. So what are we, almost 13 years or 12 years and change after that Ron Paul Giuliani moment, the argument people still haven't been convinced of this, which should be such an easy, simple argument for any human being to grasp. I mean, the controversial argument that Ron Paul made to Giuliani was literally, in essence, when you slaughter people's families, they tend to hate you. Like, that's actually the argument. It's
common sense.
Simple. Yes, as common sense you can be. But it seems still that, it's like the idea that it's radical Islam or something like that. And my response to that is always like, look, even if you're saying
why
they're
is
radical,
there a radical element of Islam?
Well, right. And even if you think if they are radical jihadists, then you really better not kill their families. I mean, like, it still doesn't disprove it.
That actually, the radical Islam is not even just a reaction to overthrowing Iraq and all that. I mean, that is part of it. But actually, the real origins of these Wahhabi madrasas started in 1976 when George Bush Sr. was the head of the DCI. They created a clique called the Safari Club. Initially, it was to go mess around with Africa, but during the Cold War, they needed proxy forces to mess with the Soviets. And you know what happened in Afghanistan, the Mujahideen, etc. They were laundering money through BCCI and setting up extremist Wahhabi schools all over the Middle East and all the way up into it was Yugoslavia. Now it's 8 different nations, but to raise generations of these people that they could use as cannon fodder. And so Zionism, Wahhabism, all these like extremist versions of faiths aren't just reacting to invasions, or whatever. They were fostered by intelligence agencies and an enormous amount of wealth to push people those directions because they wanted to have conflict because that feeds the MIC.
Right. That's right. Yeah, it's really it's like a biblical level of evil for what the amount of just like disaster that they've brought onto the world, just human tragedy after human tragedy. And I guess the silver lining of it is that it does seem more and more today that there's just more of it's being exposed. I think even though the correct ideology, which from my perspective would be like libertarianism and free markets, hasn't really been inserted into the conversation, but there certainly is less trust in institutions, in the corporate media, in the whole war machine. Like I think most Americans, or at least way more Americans today, kind of see through the bullshit.
I think it was in the conversation when Ron Paul was running, basically, the last two times he ran. Maybe when he ran with Russell Beans in the 80s, it wasn't in the conversation, but I would never hear people talk about the Federal Reserve, for example, or something. But when the Ron Paul movement hit, things that I've been trying to say forever that were not catching on, people were coming and saying it to me first, right? Did you know about central banks and da-da-da-da? So it started to get in that conversation, and then we had Gary Johnson and, you know, basically a Democrat that called himself a libertarian. But I'm excited now because Jacob Hornberger is getting in the race. And I think that conversation could come up again. And there's not a better time than now, even more than when Ron Paul was running. Because when Ron Paul ran, the internet was still a little bit of a baby. We didn't have all these social media sites, although we're losing them. We're getting censored, But it's just gotten worse since then. The housing crisis that he predicted happened, you know, I don't think anybody was hated more than Hillary and Trump. And then you look at what do they have now? Maybe Tulsi, and she probably won't win the primary. And then the rest of them are a bunch of goofballs. And then Donald Trump. So
yeah,
I think people would vote for, I don't know, who are you? Your name's Jacob. All right, you got my vote. <It's>
like, yeah, no, absolutely. And then at least that protest vote, if the guy's actually saying some really good things like Jacob Hornberger will be, I mean, hey, that's at least our best shot, you know, is to go with something like that. All right, guys, let's take a quick second and thank our sponsor for today's show, a brand new sponsor, which we're very happy to have on board. It is Flag and Anthem. Flag and Anthem is a premium quality men's brand started by two guys who worked in the industry long enough to realize something was missing. Where do regular guys go to get clothes that are not super trendy or extremely fitted and tight or too expensive or too cheap? They created a brand with superior attention to detail, quality, and fit at an accessible price point. The brand exemplifies a refined, rugged look with an authentic vintage aesthetic. Featuring casual and refined button-downs, elevated knitwear, signature chinos, denim, truck hats, and bags, Flag and Anthem also works with country star Derek's Bentley and all-pro NFL football player Christian McCaffrey. This is a brand from two guys that have been making clothes for a combined 35 years, and they don't take any shortcuts. After spending years in the industry, they finally wanted to make clothes that they would wear themselves. This includes developing the perfect fit. This is not your dad's shirt. It's not your younger brother's shirts. This is your shirt. So go to flagandanthem.com and enter the promo code POTP20 for 20% off your first order. One more time, that's flagandanthem.com, promo code POTP20 for 20% off your first order. All right, let's get back into the show. What do you, now I wanted to get into...
Or just to spread the philosophy, you know, even if he doesn't win, it shifts the window, so to speak, you know.
Yes.
There was a generation of people that are now, so I hate this word, but woke on the Federal Reserve. And a little bit, some of them are oversimplified and go around screaming Rothschild and stuff, but at least they know about it, you know, which is better than how it was.
Yeah, no, I'll take the oversimplification, even that. I mean, like, I'll take at least
take it.
If you get the idea that there are these central bankers who are manipulating the economy and they're screwing you over. That's the, you know, the basics of it. That's good enough for me. But as you said, you know, it's like, okay, we have this internet thing, and I know this is something that we wanted to talk about because you're going through a lot of this right now. So we have this internet thing, and the people who are in charge, they realize that. I mean, these people aren't stupid. They've been ruling over humanity for a while. So it's almost, especially in hindsight, but it's almost obvious that, of course, they were going to try to go after this and try to shut down dissident voices. I mean, they've had a stranglehold on the conversation for, you know, well over the last century, but really over the last century they've had that. And they weren't just going to say, oh, too bad, I guess everybody now can compete with the corporate press and there's no more gatekeepers. Well, have at it. Hopefully the best ideas rise up. Now, my prediction of this was always that the government would just regulate the internet, and that's how they would shut down these dissident voices. I have been a little bit surprised in the way that it's manifested, which has been this kind of like deplatforming by tech companies. And you, sir, I think have been like a real victim of this. Why don't you tell people about what's going on?
I've been getting it for a long time. Like, I'm one of the earliest ones. Like 2005, I was kicked off of AOL, which was before Facebook was MySpace, and before that was AOL. Everyone
so you're
was
a you're America a pioneer. Online. You're like a pioneer in being deplatformed.
What an honored badge to have. So I didn't have any foreknowledge or anything, but I predicted the 7/7 bombings in the UK, but as a speculative thing. And like all my stuff got shut down. AOL was shut down. My MySpace, which I'd put, you know, all this effort into making, was, I was kicked off MySpace. And then I was kicked off that again when I made a new one. And it was in the middle of me moving to Japan. I just waited till I got over to Asia and everything. And that is what got me, got me on my first radio shows and stuff, is people who saw what I was saying right before I got annihilated. And so it got me on shows and whatnot. And then from there, YouTube starts in 2006. I got deleted in 2008. Although I never broke their terms because I had two names and they kind of, I didn't like the first one, so I hardly ever used it. I started a second one. That one got booted, so I just went back to the old one. Never created a new one, though, because it already existed, started breaking rules. And then I got recently, this year, I've been thrown off YouTube twice, last year once, and last July I had, well, what they did is they gave me three strikes. I did an appeal, and I got one of them, you know, removed. But I couldn't really make any new videos or show my old videos because one more strike and I'd lose 13 years of work. So I actually flew to Ireland to Google headquarters because it was either that or Texas, and where I am, it's same distance really. So never been to Ireland. I went there. I talked to the bugman at Google, and I got all my strikes removed and channeled in good standing and all that. They're not going to give me ads or anything. So I thought, oh, finally, things are going well. And then, of course, I was banned on everything else. Vimeo banned me and took $5,000 worth of my sales. I make political movies, and they decided to ban me. Wouldn't even give me a reason why. I got my followers harassed them or whatever, or politely wrote letters. I don't know, probably a bit of both. So much that they finally said, well, you didn't actually break any of these terms, and they listed them all, but they didn't like my criticism of Israel. They called me anti-Semitic. I said, I'm not talking about an ethnic group. I'm not talking about a race. I'm talking about a country. You know, if I criticize North Korea, does it mean I hate Asians? You know, like that's right. It's ridiculous. But that's it doesn't matter to them. They just didn't like what I'm saying. But I really was pissed that they took all the money I just made, and I was gonna have a good Christmas with my kids, and they walked away with $5,000, and I had no way to sell my films anymore. I had to go find another platform, go through that whole headache, and then most recently I've been kicked off PayPal for the second time. First time was in 2014 because they thought I was aiding Syrian rebels or something. I wasn't. I got it back, but there's a friend of mine who's she lives in Australia, but her like nickname is Syrian Girl or whatever. So I had a button that just said that because more people knew her by her nickname than her real name, Martin Sisley. And they're like, oh, are you giving money to Syria? I'm like, no, I'm giving money to a Australian that has a Syrian nickname. That's all it was. Not going to moderate rebels, which is basically Al-Qaeda. I never would do that. So I got my PayPal back, but they got rid of all my reoccurring payments. So I was essentially starting over. And then a few weeks ago, I lost my PayPal and AdSense on the same day. And I see these people on Twitter celebrating it and saying, his Patreon is going to be next. You know, like they just, I'm like, what did I do to you? I don't even know you. And they're like, this guy, I won't say his name. But he was just saying all this libel about me on Twitter. I flag it. Nothing happens, you know. And he accused me of saying like Jews did 9/11 and all this crazy stuff. Now, I have a film about 9/11 that doesn't say anything like that at all. That's like blaming the Iraq war on the Jews, right? It's just because a lot of neocons happen to be Jewish. It wasn't anything like that. But we live in a day and age where nuance is dead.
Right.
And it's like, I call PayPal and I say, I've been with you for 15 years. You're accusing me of advocating violence, which I've never done. I have an anti-war website. And they're like, well, it's this board over here made this decision and it's irreversible. I go, well, what am I being banned for? Like, what's the example? Like, what did it say? Where? Is this on a website or YouTube video? Like, what's being held against me? Well, that's secret. Okay, so you have secret evidence and you're judge and jury and you're just going to kick me off. I had no means to get donations or sell films or memberships or anything without PayPal, and because of government regulations, the Japanese payment processor only work here, you know, and PayPal is one of the only global ones. And it's disgusting because I see the most disgusting people who have no problem with any of these platforms who actually advocate violence. You know, the mainstream media advocates violence. Like every war we've ever had, please tell me a three-letter network that was like, you know, I don't think that's true. I mean, just came out right about the false or probably non-existent gas attack in Syria that was a pretext for launching cruise missiles, right? You said it correctly. I said it correctly. Justin Armando, Scott Horton, others, they all had it right. There's no gas attack, no motive, no physical evidence. Da, 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 da. It's just now coming around. It's too late for the people who died. And even though they blocked most of the missiles, they still had to spend tens of millions of dollars to do that, you know, and it hurt them anyway. And it's just all they ever do is lie and advocate violence. And they're considered the authoritative source,
yeah,
right? The CNNs and stuff. And I mean, Wolf Blitzer's a former employee of AIPAC, who, you know, routinely spies on the United States, like does actual damage to our country. That's okay. You know, the ADL has been caught raiding in police files and things like that. Like they're damaging our country, but all these groups, they get a massive financing, total push by all the platforms. They can slander people, they can libel people, and there are no consequences. And there are other people who've also been censored who, you know, I really couldn't agree with their views like on anything, but I don't want to be the guy to deciding whose views can be said or isn't. You know, free speech is free speech. If you're not advocating violence, then you should be able to say whatever you want.
Right. You know? And it does. And it seems like it seems like there's this trend where guys like you who are going, you know, I've seen you on a couple different like YouTube videos where you're going and talking to these alt-right guys and actually telling them, you're like, yeah, this ethnostate stuff is crazy, like you don't want to be racist, mm-hmm. you should never bring violence against any minority group, and guys like you end up getting banned, and then the, like, you know, like ethnostaters the ethnostaters will get put on CNN or they get thrown like right into the forefront of things, and it's like this it's almost
their,
like,
household names, you know.
Yes,
some of these people,
they create this kind of like world where they don't want the reasonable opposition. They want like that. So they pretend that they're so scared of this, like the thing I've been saying for a long time now is, if you're saying you're so scared of some anti-Semitic movement rising up, well then you better allow people to criticize the governmental policy of Israel or the United States, mm-hmm. for that matter. If you're going to say nobody's allowed to criticize these influential Jews, then yeah, okay, what you're going to deal with is not going to be Ryan Dawson. You're going to deal with someone who's like, yeah, well then fuck all of them then. You know what I mean? And that's a lot scarier.
Yeah, but this is the opposition they want. I think they're desperate for another Tim McVeigh or, you know, a shooting or whatever, because it gives them more budgetary power, more, you know, the erosion of civil liberties, etc. These people are really sick. I mean, you're talking about people that laughed about sanctions that murdered hundreds of thousands of kids. You know, they don't care. They're not really worried about, like, some idiot that runs around with a torch or something. Like, they're insignificant. They just blow up these enemies that aren't really there, but they really hate critics like us. I don't have a shaved head and tattoos and saying racist bullshit. That's what they need. That's what they want. I can hit Israel hard where it hurts just based on the facts. I mean, they have snipers shooting kids in the knees and the bulldozing homes and annex land. Like, most people, once they know that that's happening, don't want to give money to Israel, don't support that at all. Most Israelis aren't going to support that either. Thing is, they don't know that. The version they get from TV is Hamas is firing thousands of rockets every day at a child holding a puppy on Mother's Day or whatever. You know, it's nonsense. It's like,
well, and the lies kind of like fade away. You know, it's a lot of times what guys like me and you are battling against is the short attention span, because the lies after, like, even you just pointed to with the Assad gas attack, it's like, okay, so this WikiLeaks release, now we've got like more evidence that this was fabricated from the beginning. But it doesn't even really matter. It's not like you claim any victory, because they've already moved on to, we got to protect the Kurds, and there's like this new like reason why we have to be involved in this war.
You're
like, yeah, that was like three reasons ago why we needed. Yeah, sure, we were advocating, we started another huge war over this, but we've moved on to this other thing. And so many of these things, I mean, like, you look at, like,
it's weird too,
Netanyahu,
because they want an ethnostate, they want a Kurdistan, they want a Jewish state.
Yes,
they want ethnostates sometimes, like when it's causing violence for everyone else. Like, Kurds can live in Syria just like they did before this war started, as citizens of Syria. You don't get to have a ethnically exclusive state within another state. Yeah. They already pushed out the Assyrians and Christians and Druze and other ethnic minorities to create Rojava. And, you know, I have a lot of videos about Syria, but, like, you don't get to do that. But our government supports it. They support it in Ukraine. All of a sudden, then Nazis are okay. We'll give them guns and money.
Like, right.
There's no principle. You know, the only principle is, will this initiate a lot of violence? All right, let's do it. That's the government's way.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, it's like, it's hard to, you know, I'm really not a fan of Donald Trump. And of course, with all the stuff you've been talking about with Israel, I mean, he's just so bad.
Probably for all different reasons than what he actually gets criticized for.
Yes, the exact opposite. I mean, the truth is, you know, I'm not going to vote for Donald Trump. I didn't vote for him last time. I don't support him. And the stuff in Yemen, his policy on Israel are just too bad. They're too disqualifying for me to support him. But I do got to say, Iran, terrible on Iran. Pretty good on North Korea. A few things here and there that he's decent on. And rhetorically,
Bolton
he's
screwed
decent.
That up.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But, you know, I got to say, I have to at least tip my hat to Trump that, you know, back when they were saying, you know, Assad, you know, did another chemical attack, when they were pushing that around, just about any other president, I think, would have been more likely. I mean, had it been Hillary Clinton, we probably, first off, we never would have stopped arming the moderate rebels if it was Hillary Clinton. And I think she probably would have had much
they
more.
They cut off
of a
heads
response.
In a moderate way.
That's
they're
right.
moderate yes. head choppers.
Weren't they eating slowly. A heart at one point? One of them was eating a heart.
So one of them from Al-Sham was grilling a pilot's heart and eating it. And John McCain went and met with that group.
That's right. Yes.
A friend of mine wrote that story, Michael Kyle, journalist from Ireland. He's now deceased, but he did good work on that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so, you know, it's like at least Trump seems to have, you know, some hesitation before starting a new big war or before pushing like into do, like.
Do you know who drug him into shooting the cruise missiles? Was his daughter.
That's right.
This is according to his son. Yeah.
Jesus.
She, you know, the poor children speech. And, she, you know, she's married into the Kushner family who has Netanyahu sleeping at their house. So no yeah. doubt what kind of influence they had there.
Netanyahu, who's now been indicted right on a
and has a panic
charges.
Attack.
Yeah. Yeah. Look yeah. at that.
But that's the thing. Bribery charges and corruption, not murder, not smuggling Krytron triggers in and stealing, you know, nuclear material or all the long list of crimes this butcher has done. It's. Oh, you took illegal campaign finance things. So did his wife. That's what they got to get him on.
Well, I would even settle. This is how much we're being, how badly we're losing, that I would even settle for, even if we're not going to start charging people with war crimes, even the ones who certainly should be charged with war crimes. Yeah. But even if we're not, can we at least say, well, you don't get to, like, make the next call? You know, like, can we at least say that all the journalists and all the neocons and all the war hawks who sold us the war in Iraq, like, we don't listen to them when they're advising us to go into the next war, even if we're not going to, like, prosecute them or something like that. But, of course, those are the exact same people. I mean, Netanyahu, when he would say, you know, I mean, like...
Judith Biller got a job at Fox.
Right,
after
right.
After going to jail. After going to jail.
I mean, like, the fact that I almost, in a weird... perverse, sick way, it almost makes me admire some of them. Like Netanyahu was on television sometime in this last year, we were talking about on the show, and he was like, Iran is close to developing a nuclear weapon. And you're just like, dude, the ball's on you, man. Like, he's been saying this since the late 80s, and he's given timelines. Yes, he's given timelines.
There's a report in Mother Jones, not the best media, but this article was good, and they had a list of how many they've been 6 months away for decades. Yeah. You know, they're always 6 months away, and he's got this stupid cartoon bomb.
Yeah.
And you know who did a really good debunking of that? Oh, it was like 9 years ago, but Scott Horton did this like 7-minute speech that just had all the Iran rhetoric and excuses and then the reality and a little bit of teaching you about uranium, like it's got to be 90% or above to make a nuclear weapon, da, da, da. It's only like 9 minutes long and not 7 minutes long, and it perfectly sums it up. And you wouldn't know. It's like he made it yesterday, because all the crap they're saying now is exactly what they were saying back then. The same lies. Nothing changed.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there'll be one new incident, you know, one new thing. Oh, they bombed this submarine, or they did some attack that the Houthis are claiming they were responsible for on the Saudi oil field or something like that. But it's basically the same thing. And then right away, and they're working on a nuclear weapon or something. And it's just what's infuriating is that people seem to like you would think they would all be discredited and go away. I remember people like the Sean Hannity Fox News talking points were after the Mueller report came out, and they were like, "Well,
it's
all
just
these
a
people,
tweak on we can't."
Well, they were saying
it's
all
just,
these
just
people
a tweak,
are,
right?
Right, but they were saying, "Well, all these people who were promoting, you know, the Russia collusion hoax, they're all discredited." And you're like, "Really? Really are they?" Because I'm still hearing from Max Boot on CNN. You know what I mean? Like, if he's not discredited by now, who
now
is?
It's the Ukraine gate instead. It's these
right.
phone calls.
Right.
The whole Iran is building the bomb stuff is a tweak about the Iraq. You can't let the smoking gun be a mushroom cloud. Fear propaganda. Fear plan.
Right.
It's the same rhetoric. Iran wants to build nuclear power because if they have nuclear power for electricity, it frees up all the oil they currently consume on electricity, which they could put on the open market, which that would give them enough to where they would be able to build all their infrastructure without getting international loans. Welcome to the first world. They don't want that to happen. So they say, oh, they're building nuclear weapons. And the audacity is the Israelis, the Americans, they're all guilty of what they're accusing everyone else of. You know who does have nuclear weapons? Israel. They stole the material from the United States and built it. You know the only country to actually use nuclear weapons? The United States. on civilian cities, right? And that's so, well, that just gets a pass. Like you did Nagasaki and Hiroshima. There's still radiation death from that, by the way. And it's, oh, well. And the, I hate the lie about, well, that saved lives. You get, that would trigger me if you went into that one.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the same as up is down. You know, the problem is that we didn't intervene enough in World War One and World War Two. That's the problem. You know, it's just like everything is twisted into the exact
opposite. We didn't surge big enough in Iraq.
Right. All of these things, right. Or is the reason why, like my favorite one, which just right-wingers can't get out of their head, is that the big problem was that Obama pulled the troops out of Iraq. Like you have this two-pronged attack when ISIS went in stormed into Iraq, and it's like one is that Obama is arming ISIS in Syria, and the other is that he pulled troops out of Iraq. And there's like, you know what the problem here was? Pulling the troops out of Iraq. It's like, well, how about the funding and arming ISIS part? Couldn't we have just not done that? And it's like, well, you know, that's, we don't really talk about that.
Well, we hadn't handed the government over to Shia nepotists, and there wouldn't have been a conflict with the Sunni and the Kurds.
Well, that's for sure.
And there wasn't before. They used to be all intermarried and everything else. And so as bad as Saddam was, every bad thing he did, we made worse. We made more war, torture, rape, starvation, all that made it worse. And it's ongoing. And you made Al-Qaeda in Iraq becomes the Al-Qaeda of Iraq and Syria. That's all ISIS means, right? Right. It's the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. And yeah, it's just, but I don't know if it's correct to call it blowback, because blowback is unintended consequences. I think they're indifferent to the consequences. They're like, yeah, let's just make a mess. And it did result in terrorist attacks throughout Europe. And, you know, knock on wood, it could still happen in the United States, because you're over there murdering people. And the cognitive dissonance is just amazing. Like, oh, why are we being attacked? What did the September 11th hijackers say they're motivated by? All the slaughter in Iraq and Lebanon, and it, you know, legitimately so to be mad about those things. That doesn't mean you can go kill people in New York or anything. But, you know, it's a very reasonable, predictable consequence.
Yeah.
You know, how would you feel if people murdered your kids? You know, it's that the most basic, put yourself in someone else's shoes, something you should learn when you're 3 years old, you know, and it just isn't there with government.
No, absolutely. And if there's any, like the best evidence to me of the fact that they know, like that they know that this is what's really motivating them, is that since 9/11, they've had dozens and dozens of what they call FBI sting operations, which are really FBI entrapment operations. Mm-hmm. And every single time when they try to recruit these guys, they never go to them and go, hey, don't you just hate the Bill of Rights? Don't you hate that we have freedom and wealth? And oh my God, did you see Ariana Grande's last video? Isn't it terrible what the West is? What they say every time is, what do you think of America's foreign policy? Look what they're doing to these Muslim countries. That this is every time, this is how they, even when we're mm-hmm. doing it, just to set someone up to like inflate FBI, you know, like statistics. This is how they recruit people. They know exactly what motivates these people. And yes, many of them are religious fundamentalists, and sure, there's problems with that, but that's what they're clinging to. The motivating factor is the fucking bodies. And I, of course, like you said, this is just basic understanding of the human condition. You don't like to see
it. Is to me
killed.
I mean, it seems like common sense, but it's like we don't have common sense. There's this right-wing comedian, I'm not going to steal his routine or anything, you're a funny guy too, but there's this Italian guy, and he was saying, I'm a right-wing comedian, which is pretty rare, because most of comedy is leftist, or you offended someone and now you're out of the building. We need a safe space for comics all of a sudden. But he's saying, you know, right-wing comedians, when you get to say things that are common sense, that are not politically correct, but are correct. Like, if you want to go to school, you should pay for it. Or there are two genders. Or, you know, just, he does a whole list of things that are like, well, obvious. That was obvious in the 80s or whatever. Now it's, what do you mean? It's all about identity. And da-da-da-da-da-da. And that extremism with that, it has a polar backlash, right? That the SJW culture and the total protection around it is what gave rise to its polar opposite. And people are gravitating towards socialism nowadays, nationalism, or even ethno-nationalism, and all these things. And that's why we desperately need that libertarian voice because I'll hear people, oh, libertarian. And then I say, all right, what's your problem with libertarianism? And it's always actually an argument against anarchy, not libertarianism. Act like right. We don't want to have courts or anything. Like, right. No, I just don't want it. I don't want the government involved in picking winners and losers in the marketplace. It's that simple. Like, you can still have courts. You can still have police. You know, it's like, it's not anarchy. It's just the government's too big. And, you know, all this on the socialist side, when they're talking about all the problems of crony capitalism and bailouts and no bid contracts, I'm like, what do all these things have in common? Who enables it? Like, who gave the money to Lockheed Martin? Oh, the government right. did. Well, who bailed out the bank? Oh, the government did. You know, and like, who set the regulations that got that whole housing crisis in anyway? The government and that quasi, I don't know what you call the Fed. It's not really government or private. It's sort of its own category because they're appointed by the president, but they're not responsible to anyone. But yeah, like, all they will agree if they're able to hear the libertarian philosophy, but there are sort of people who called themselves libertarian who never were, just to be not mainstream and be edgy or whatever, but they never really understood the philosophy. And so I'm excited to have another Ron Paul-esque person running, like Jacob Hornberger. Like, that's, even if he doesn't win, like, we need that conversation shifted so that because if the philosophy spreads, that helps anyway. Like, you don't have to do it through government. All you need the government to do is to quit doing things.
Yeah,
like, really. We just had a $55 billion trade deal with Japan. I can now go get U.S. beef, big fat steak for $6. Couldn't do that before. And like, oh, yes, because Trump lifted some tariffs and so did Abe. But that's not the government doing something. That's the government stopping doing what it already was doing. Like, they're the one that made the tariff in the first place.
Right.
So all you did was, like, quit doing what you caused. Like, it's a problem that you made, and you finally stopped doing it. So it's like, if the government could do some more or less stop doing things, that would help a lot.
Yeah, well, there's a lot in there in what you just said, and I think that the like, what do they call it? The libertarians or whatever, which is like the right wing.
It's dismissive.
Dismissive take on libertarians. And to me, what a lot of that comes from is the fact that after, because you didn't hear this until Ron Paul's presidential campaigns ended. And that's when this term started really coming around. And the truth is that there have been no libertarian leaders since that had any real teeth or real courage. And I think when you see what, as you mentioned, this is kind of a response to the crazy, unhinged, woke, you know, PC left. And when you're under attack constantly and in the most absurd ways, like they're looking for someone who's actually going to fight back and take a principled stand. And obviously just calling someone a libertarian, there's no argument there. It's just some like dismissive bullshit. But it's like, I do
kind of like, oh, we already addressed that and dismissed it in our own echo chamber with no libertarians around.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Exactly. All right. Let's take a quick second and thank our sponsor for today's show, which is the Ridge Wallet. Ridge Wallet is the coolest wallet out there. It's the sleekest wallet. You feel like you're in the future. The wallet you've been walking around with that's throwing your spine out of alignment, that's the wallet that your grandpa would have had, that your father would have had. This is the wallet of the future. It's the better way to hold your cards and your cash. You have your old wallet. You have gift cards that have been used up. You have old receipts. You have things you've completely forgotten about that you're never going to use again. Start over. Get the Ridge Wallet. You have everything you need. You got your credit cards. You got your cash. It looks awesome. They have a bunch of different designs. It's a minimal front pocket wallet that's designed to streamline what you carry every day. It has 30,000 five-star reviews because it's a better way to carry your cash and cards. I love it. I switched from the traditional wallet over to the Ridge Wallet. Great decision. I feel better. I'm more comfortable when I'm sitting down and I don't have this big brick in my back left pocket. And it also just looks really cool. It comes in titanium, carbon fiber, aluminum, and over a dozen different styles and colors. And right now, you can get 10% off the Ridge Wallet with free worldwide shipping and returns by going to ridge.com/problem. That's ridge.com/problem. Use the promo code problem. There's also a link in the episode description below. Awesome wallet. Check it out. It also makes a great gift for the holiday season. So go check it out at ridge.com/problem. All right, let's get back into the show. My message, I was up at a Pork Fest last year, and I was talking to like a group of libertarians, and they were kind of talking about the alt-right guys and how they kind of like talk to them. And I was like, my thing to them is that it's like, you got to like, you got to take a ballsy position. You have to be willing to like stand up to the left in as hardcore a way as they are, and then also stand up to them, and then also tell them why they're retarded as well. You know what I mean? Like, you just have to like have like the courage to say basic truths. Like, even that example of the right-wing comedian you were just using, it's like, look, man, if you don't have the courage to say that there aren't 72 genders, then how are you going to stand up to the CIA and like real true entrenched powers? Like, you got to have the courage.
Yeah, the problem is when you say there are two genders, like, it's that thing. You can sum it up real quick. People are confusing masculine and feminine with male and female. Yeah. Male and female are biological categories, you know, penis, vagina, and masculine and feminine are sort of cultural qualities. And a man can be feminine. That doesn't mean he's supposed to be a woman, just means he's a guy who happens to be feminine, right? And a woman can be masculine. They want this teleology. Again, they are guilty of what they accuse everyone else of. They think that feminine and female have to match and male and masculine have to match. So if they don't, you're supposed to be the other one. Let's pour on the hormones and the surgery and whatever. And I'm not even against that. If you want to do that, fine. But I don't want men playing women's sports. I don't want a man thrown in a woman's jail. This actually happened, where he then raped women in the jail with his penis. You know, it's clown world stuff. But the problem is, if you're on YouTube or whatever and you say there are two genders, it's hate speech.
Right.
Right. Like, if That's you right. say common sense stuff, it's considered hate speech. The alt-right, they'll come out with all these statistics about race and crime or IQ or whatever. And I will give them the other explanations besides biology for all those things, which is a long conversation. And I've been able to convert quite a big chunk of them to that. Huh, I hadn't thought of it like that. I didn't know that, or whatever. And so dialogue is what gets rid of that. But deplatforming and echo chambers, that just lets it fester and grow, right?
No, I completely agree with that. And it's almost as if the goal was to build the alt-right up as much as possible, the establishment couldn't have done a better job of it. Like, whatever their goal was, but from Hillary Clinton's deplorable speech to the banning to then promoting the leaders, then banning other people, then constantly lecturing white people about their privilege. I mean, they've done everything they can to create that situation.
Yeah, and that's racist itself. And racism begets racism. If you're going to say what's essentially racist things about white people, like millions of people, oh, they all are this, like this, right? Then there's going to be a backlash. Like, a portion of those people are going to be sick of it. There's nothing surprising by somebody going, how come my group is held to a higher standard than this other group, right? Like, when my children, if they wanted to go to college in the US, they got to get a higher, because they're half Asian, they got to get higher score than anybody. Why? They're not advantaged anyway by biology, but the left wants to take like average statistics. They do this with the wage gap BS, like, well, on average, men earn more than women. I'm like, well, on average, men are working in fields that pay more. And there are a whole bunch of reasons for that are not, it's not biology, okay? But that, you know, it would be really weird if everybody of every category was exactly the same in every industry. That would be strange. There's always gonna be one more than the other in something. Right. That's just normal.
Right. Yeah.
They're like, oh, we want all the exact same male engineers and nurses and da 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 da. And I'm like, who cares? But it's just like proving that people don't understand math. I had a great statistics teacher that said people are innumerate, not illiterate. They're innumerate. They can't look at averages and understand what that number means. And you're not getting paid less for the same job just because the average pay is less overall. It right. could be more men are working or whatever, you know, and you can endlessly make categories. Well, how tall are they? There's some stats that like taller people make more than shorter people and stuff like that. And it's like, they don't really. It's the men are taller than women and they earn more and you know, add whatever. It's just like, you look at different demographics have a higher height than others, but you have to look at average ages, right? So it's like, oh, Hispanics earn less than Japanese or something. I'm like, yeah, well, the average age of Japanese in the US is in the 40s, and the average age of Hispanics is in the 20s, and people in their 40s earn more than people in their 20s. There's nothing right. magic about it, you know, like, but you need to, it's not, let me say, you got to throw a Thomas Sowell book at somebody or something. It's like, these kind of simple things, it's like a death by 100 cuts that you have to explain a lot of stuff. But they're not allowed to hear it, because if I'm going to have that discussion with someone, don't even have to be on the alt-right, it's just whoever, I'll get banned. because just for letting them speak, right? I breathe the same air as somebody who's literally Hitler. And from talking to these people, like, none of them really, I'm not none, there are some, but they're not, they don't want violence, or they're not racist, they're not Hitler, they're not Nazis, or any of that. They want, like, things to be even, that's all.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
And there's some, an over, listen, the, I mean, most of, like, most, I think, of the way that history works is that, you know, people are reactionary. They form groups and react against others, and that they kind of, they tend to overcompensate, but overcorrect maybe is the term I'm looking for, that they tend to. So it's kind of like people work on this instinctual level where they, like, they, you know, even you see today, like, the people on the left, you know, if you look at, like, Occupy Wall Street or something like that, where they're like, well, this is corrupt, so we need socialism. They, you know, they want this kind of overcorrection, but they are responding to something that is corrupt. These bankers brought down the economy and get bailed out for it. That is kind of bullshit. Mm-hmm. And then their answer might not be perfect, but I think a lot of these young men who are drawn to the alt-right, it's like, they're lectured constantly about what they can and can't say. They live in this hyper-political correct world. And they're like, well, how about the Holocaust never happened? How about that? The Holocaust never happened, and now I can say, yeah, I know, whatever. I don't mind.
Well, I get lumped in with that crap, too. I'm like, I give this analogy. I'll be real, like, clean with my language here. But with, like, the Holocaust stuff, for example, let's move away from that because it's too emotional. To talk about something that's also emotional but less than that would be like climate change, right?
Sure.
For the sake of argument, the Earth is getting warmer, and it just put on pause of how much is man-made and how much is natural, and doesn't matter. If, let's say it is getting warmer, fine. If you're going to do what Al Gore did and take footage from a fictional movie The Day After Tomorrow and act like that's the ice caps melting and it isn't, and if you're going to say the Earth is gone in 12 years, which it will not be, and have polar bears and have a whole bunch of either greatly exaggerated or fake things, like a picture of Kilimanjaro in the summer and the winter, and say, look how much it changed from this year to that, and not telling people it's opposite seasons, you know?
Right.
If you're going to mislead, lie, and exaggerate, it makes people doubt your position. Yes. Rather than accept it. That doesn't mean the Earth isn't warming. It just means that silly evidence that you provided for it causes doubt. Now imagine if you made a rule to say you're not allowed to say the Earth isn't warming. That would make people doubt it more, not less, right? Now with World War II, you have a pretty similar situation. There definitely was a Holocaust, yes, but there were definitely a lot of bullshit said about it as well, about soap and lampshades and all these ridiculous exaggerations, electric floors, death by lumberjack, and so on. And so my position is, you should debunk all the silliness, just like you should debunk Al Gore and AOC and all that. And that doesn't mean this isn't true. It's just like, it's very important to get rid of these exaggerations, because if you don't, and once people find out they are exaggerations, they say, like, oh, there was no gas chamber at Buchenwald or something. There wasn't. Or there was, you know, Al Gore used fake footage or something. They throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Right.
But you cannot have nuance on these topics. Like,
well, that's
you
a
might
great
get banned
point.
From me even saying yes. The H word, you know.
Well, this is a great point. And this is, you actually just said, you said better what I was trying to say before to the libertarians at Porkfest, where I was saying the reason why you have to have the courage to stand up to some of this leftist craziness is that if you don't, then you kind of cede that ground to the only people who will. And if the only person who will stand up and tell the truth on a number of issues is also saying some crazy shit that you don't want to be out there, then they go, that people tend to go, well, at least he's the only one actually telling me the truth. I mean, look, this is part of the reason why when I used to, like, listen to Alex Jones fairly regularly, and I could always tell he was a little, like, crazy and full of shit. Like, I could just always tell, you know, just from his, like, personality. But there was something.
The Chi-Coms are making the frogs gay. They're coming after your guns. Put your FEMA cam black helicopters chasing me right now.
Yeah, that's actual tape of Alex Jones. No, but you know what? Part of the reason why somebody like that became so popular is because there are all of these real conspiracies out there, as you know very well, that the media just doesn't report on. And then he'll throw a few of them out. And I remember learning that, like, I heard about Operation Northwood from Alex Jones. I'd never heard about that before. And I hear about that and I'm like, this can't possibly be true. And then you look it up and you're like, oh, this is real. This really happened. And or the plan really got signed off by the Joint Chiefs. And you're like, so this is real. And only he told me about that. So now if the corporate press refuses right. to cover this, he gains all this credibility with young me where I go, oh, shit, only he was willing to tell the truth. And then you
have a little counter argument to that, too, because I feel like you've probably heard that from I call him Melonhead. I really don't like him, but you heard it from Melonhead first because he kind of acts like the alt media dragnet so that if he was out of the way, you would have heard it from me.
Well, that's or possibly someone true, like too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's because he's there just sucking all the air out of the room. They're like, well, the first time I heard about X was from Alex Jones. And I'm like, yeah, but you know, look, we were saying this. He hijacked a lot of things that I said, and then he would say, "What it doesn't, I don't care." But it's but then he adds crazy sauce to all of it. Right. So it's like if you want to talk about the Levon affair or something like that, and then it's like, "Oh boy, here comes Jonestown," and I got to spend like 20 minutes on defense. Where you're like, "No, I'm not denying school shootings. No, I'm not thinking the Earth is whatever." Yeah, like, he's not a flat earther. He's not that bad. But like, you know what I mean? Saying Fukushima radiation is coming on to America, or all the elite are going to live in bunkers in New Zealand. Like, sometimes he goes way off the rails, right? But you know, if 10% of what he's saying true, that's 10% more than the mass media, because right. all they do that's is right. lie. Yeah. CNN said about the Malaysian airliner that maybe a black hole swallowed the
yes.
plane.
Yes, that was Don Lemon, who is,
yeah.
he is, I think, the dumbest person in cable news, which is really, really saying something, because there's a lot of people competing for that title. But yes, he openly started speculating a about whether hole. It could have been a black hole that took
Do
down
you
the
even science?
It's like, I mean, it's so, it's really like, it, as you said before, it's clown world. It's truly, truly clown world. So let's talk a little
I wanna,
bit about
something you said earlier. Sure, I want to bump in. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead.
But you had a key point, and I was kind of like holding this thought in my head because the alt-right and the SJWs, I feel like when you were talking about, you said not overcompensation, but you know, overcompensation. It's like the paternalistic racism, like, hey, look, here's my black friend. Here's my Jew friend. Like people who announce
right.
adjectives like matters. But anyway, that I feel like it's two reactions to the same thing, and it's collectivism once again, whereas it's from white guilt. Like most of the social, both groups are white people in the SJWs and the alt-right. And it's a way of reacting to this collective blame on a race for what states did. So if you talk about atrocities like slavery in the United States or colonizing of the Indians or something like that, which is what a government did, that gets blamed on whiteness instead. Like the whites killed the Indians, the whites enslaved the Africans, the white, as if that's a product of biology. It's not. You know, who do the Irish and the Polish and all these other white people, they're not enslaving people, whatever. It's definitely because of a government. And you can see that there are other white countries not involved in it. It's common sense, ought to be. But there's this collectiveness. But they do the other thing, too. Like, well, so-and-so invented XYZ, and he was white, and Isaac Newton. But the force behind invention and science and all that isn't biology. It's free markets. And you can look at that globally and historically. That's what holds. If you have sea trade and markets and so on, then, you know, that those kind of spring forth. But this collectivism on blaming a racial group for atrocities either makes someone feel like really terrible about it and want to overcompensate and sort of like hate themselves and hate others and that's why they want to support affirmative action and anything that helps them relieve that guilt, right? And they show it's not their fault. It's not a biological product. The other side gets resentful for it and saying, why blame me? I didn't do it, whatever. And they go the other way. And I think the birthplace of the alt-right and SJWs is this nonsense from public education that is collectivist and is blaming races and also taking credit, whether it's good or bad. They think it is a product of biology rather than any other source. And so that you see that they both hold the only two groups that are obsessed with race and sex and, you know, all these categories are SJWs and the alt-right.
Yeah, and it's interesting.
Got to break that biological cord. That's all.
That's right, and it's also. It always seems like to me that the the government or the area of politics is where you see like almost like, you know, this is where people are like, look, there's like a goddamn race war. It's like, go on a YouTube video and look at the left or the alt right. And it's like, you could get lost on a YouTube stream of like social justice warriors and then alt right guys and be like, man, this country's on the verge of a race war. But then I walk outside my door and I go down to like the supermarket and it's like, everybody seems to be kind of working it out and figuring it out together. And people are friends and people are hanging out. And even if they're not friends or hanging out, even if they have some private, you know, somewhat bigoted beliefs, they're fucking trading with each other and everything's fine and everyone's really just trying to get home to their family and kind of, you know, like,
well, it's amplified pluralism is what happens. So a quick example, there's some kid named Desmond, you know who I'm talking about already, mm-hmm. right? It's one kid and he puts on makeup or whatever and he danced in a gay bar or something. That just is like some one kid that became, kids are dancing in gay bars everywhere and it's just like one guy. The knockout game that happened like 5 times. Oh, it's an epidemic. They're running around knocking people out on the street for no reason. And that just went away, right? So it's like the media is grabbing these things they know is going to cause a conflict, right? And just blow it up. That Desmond kid's been on all the three-letter networks, like, yeah, let's show this to conservative Christians and stuff. A little boy with eyeliner and they know that's not gonna fly, you know, and that they do it on purpose. It's Frankfurt School. It's like they want clickbait has extended to all forms of media, right? It started on the web, whatever, but it's just everything, and they exotic titles and all that. But
yeah, and they,
it really bothers me.
Oh, it's infuriating because it's like you motherfuckers are like playing around with inflaming racial tensions. Like, this is not a joke. This can go really, really bad. I mean, I remember thinking about it with the what's the fucking guy's name? The guy in Chicago, the black gay guy who did that fake hate crime. I'm blanking on his fucking name. You hear about this? He was
hate crimes are self-inflicted, I find.
Well, this one was really particularly outrageous, where the guy said that two guys in Trump hats came. Jussie Smollett. Yes. So it ended up being complete bullshit.
Jussie Smollett, as Dave Chappelle said.
That's hilarious. Yes, that's right. So Justin Smollett, he makes this whole thing up. But the thing that's crazy is that even if the story he told was true, it wasn't national news. It was like a guy got punched in Chicago. People get murdered in Chicago, like dozens almost every week get
dozen
shot.
Dozen every weekend, yeah.
It's like, why is this even a national story if what he said was true? Only because the angle is black guy got punched by white people. Let's make this a race
they
story.
Trump hats. And
then,
news.
Right. And then they flip it around and go, black guy
that
made
was
up
the
racial
most
story.
It's over just the top. Nonsense.
Oh, so
like,
ridiculous.
Did you guys write the Litvinenko script or the Skripal script,
right,
or the used cars mail or Hezbollah getting used cars from Mexico to sell in Africa? Like some of the real stories, right? Like, yeah. Alleged, the real stories from not fake news. Yeah, that was really over the top. And he got busted, but nothing happened to him. Right.
Oh no! It's in like fact, he's suing the city for like a false prosecution or something like that. Now he's probably
and that won't
lose.
Cause tension with the police at all.
Well, that's right. But then,
how about the kid with the hat that was just standing in D.C. on the Lincoln
Memorial? Oh, yeah, that's right. The Catholic school, the Covington Catholic school kids, and this
Nathan Phillips
up.
Is like all in his face because he just assumes, well, it's a bunch of white kids. One of them has a Trump hat. I'm gonna go virtue single in front of him.
But once again, even if the story was what they claimed it was right away, why is this on national television? This is not a story. Even if the story was high school kid is kind of a jerk, like, is that a story really? And then it turns out he wasn't a jerk at all.
He was just standing there.
But then on the other side of it, you'll see some of these things where, like, when some white dude gets murdered by the cops, yeah, they don't really run with that because that's not going to inflame racial tensions, because then you might actually start realizing, oh, this is more of a policing problem than it is really a racial problem, and that's not really going to pit people against each other. That just kind of unites people against the state, so that doesn't do anything, you know what I mean, for the
and also not covering that stuff even remotely evenly or whatever. people are going to notice that. Like the alt-right will say, hey, look at this white girl that got raped by three guys from Dominica or whatever, right? Why wasn't this national news yet this other fake story was, right? Like you're just giving them legitimate ammo.
Yeah,
right. That's right. By treating things like that.
Yeah, and they do have a fair point in that, because they're right. If the races were reversed, the national press would have jumped on this and made it a huge story. The answer isn't necessarily that, though, that now we have to draw some grand
conclusion from this. Do more big stories.
Yes, the answer is that none of these are, like, you know, unfortunately, there is violence in this world. And, you know, as you pointed out earlier, the most institutional and the most widespread form of it comes from the state. But yeah, it really is like it's scary what they're willing to play with. And I saw this with like the Democrats who are now, at least several of the candidates are running on reparations for slavery. And it's like, do you guys look around at what's going on? Like, what do you think that'll do for race relations?
Wait a second. Didn't the Democrats under Obama and Hillary invade Libya and cause open air slavery in 2011 in Northern Africa? Are they running on the make slavery great again? Because that's what they did. Human beings were sold for $400. Go look this up, people. $400. You could buy a person in Libya because of essentially handing Al-Qaeda a country. That's what it was Hillary's war. I call Obama the spineless, but Hillary, that was her plan. And then that caused a refugee crisis and you know, more and more escalation of problems because of government decisions by idiots. And this, when coming back to the censorship thing, I hear a couple solutions. People, oh, we need to enforce antitrust laws and we need to make them or public utilities. Like, well, really, when the government in charge, you think that's going to be better? The government, look at me. The government is not going to help you. Okay? You have Stockholm syndrome if you think the government wants a vibrant alternative media. All right? Yeah. The only real solution, as grim as it may seem, is market solution. So, you know, get on VK instead of Facebook. Start using DLive or BitChute or Libri or something instead of YouTube if you've been kicked off. Start using maybe Gab in just as a backup for Twitter. And instead of using Instagram, have a self-esteem.
That is good advice, sir. But like you said, it does sound kind of grim, and this is one of the reasons why libertarians tend to lose, because it's always
it
a
sounds
little bit
grim
easier.
But it's the real
but
world
yes,
solution.
Yes, exactly. No, it is the correct answer, but it always sounds better. It's an easier sale to say, no, let's just write a law, let's just have a government policy and we'll just do it. And that's a simple sell. And it, you know what, no matter what it is, it's like, even if you're talking about like immigration or something like that, and you go like, oh, well, maybe we shouldn't have a huge welfare state. Maybe we should stop destabilizing all of these countries in South America. Maybe this will it's like, nah, build a wall. Build a wall is just, sells. That's like, we got a plan, we're going to do this. All this other, like, kind of, you know, it's kind of abstract, principled take. It's just hard. This is the libertarian difficulty. What we
How
have
dare
going
you,
for
nuance.
Us, yeah, well, that's right. what we have going for us is that the truth is on our side. So what we have going for us is that we're right. The problem is that it's like six sentences to sell it. And it's not one sentence. Whereas a status policy
into existence.
Yes, exactly. Yes, that's right.
Well, look, like where I live, we don't have an immigration problem, and yet Japan is a second or third wealthiest country in the world, and right next to a whole lot of poor places, and we don't have an immigration problem. We also don't have social welfare. You know how many refugees Japan took in last year? 47. 47. And that was double and they complained. Right? It turns out if you don't put sugar on the floor, you don't get ants.
Right. Right. Yeah.
If you come to Japan, you're going to have to work. So why would you do that? Just go to Sweden and get a free house. And it's like,
right. And then, yeah. And you also, you know, you get what you attract is a result of the system that you have in place. So if you say you come here, you're going to have to work. Well, then the people who do go there come there to work. And if you have a big welfare state, a lot of people come there to get on the government dole. And so, you know, of course,
and it's necessary for to have these policies where Japan would be Chinese overnight, and it wouldn't be Japanese anymore. It wouldn't assimilate. It just 26 million Chinese people would move to Japan in an instant. You know, it's way better to live in Japan than China.
Sure.
It's getting better in China, but especially when they were communists, I mean, it was terrible. Like, people would come to Japan and have a baby and then go back to China because they had a one-child policy. So they come over here and have the baby and then go back. I mean, it's ridiculous, the stupid government logic. Like, right next to Taiwan, going back to common sense, Taiwan's a country, right? I mean, they have their own government, their own currency, their own laws. It's a country. But we have the one China policy. It's like, right. Now, only in government logic is Taiwan still part of China, right?
Right.
It's like, what are you talking about? It's a country. Just admit it. Nope. You know, no, we're not going to do that. Everyone knows Israel has nukes, but our government stance is to neither deny or acknowledge kind of thing.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
But there's pictures of the warheads from Mordecai Vanunu. You know, who Robert Maxwell, by the way, helped put in prison. His daughter is the fellow rapist with Jeff Epstein. Probably don't have time to get into any of that stuff. But
we're going to have to do that on another show. I wanted to talk Epstein with you, but we'll have to do another podcast because otherwise we're just going to rush through it the whole time. But that really
is some dark stuff, though, man. It's you know what? I'll say this quickly about Epstein. He's most infamous about being a child raping lunatic and a blackmailer and so on, which he was. Not alone, though. He had a whole huge backing. He just wasn't some guy that appeared. But when he started working with the Mossad, the first thing he was trying to do is illegal arms sales with, like, Doug Leese and the who's who. But his very first Ponzi schemes, like ripping off insurance companies and then trying to buy out airliners and so on, with Steve Hoffenberger and those guys, he got bailed out by the New York Federal Reserve. He set up Liquid Funding LTD in Bermuda to act as basically a sieve to offload toxic assets from Bear Stearns. So, you know, Bear Stearns was in the subprime market and all that. And for people who don't know what I'm talking about, what they do to balance their books is they'll take a bunch of debts, like money they owe and IOUs, and sell it to their own subsidiary. So they'll sell it to Epstein. So now he owes all the money. And then their book looks good to the rating agency. They're like, look, we're solvent, you know. But then at the first of the month, they buy him back again. It's not a real sale. So they would go in a loop like that. So that was like the simple part of the gamut. But the result was, guys like Jeff Epstein and Steely and all these people, and it's not just Bear Stearns, it's like every financial institution, Goldman Sachs, it's all of them. They made Maiden Lane, and then together with the financial banks, they came in and bought out Bear Stearns. But the senior loan in that entire affair was from Maiden Lane LLC, created by the New York Federal Reserve. It was $28 billion out of $30 billion. So wow. JP Morgan Chase is only paying like $1.5 billion. And then essentially a dummy company set up by the New York Federal Reserve pays the other $28 to make solvent other companies that were totally engaged in fraud. And it got worse. They put commercial paper into Dreyfus Money Market and Frank Russell Investment and others, that like hundreds of millions of dollars of dummy money. And it's way worse than the kind of common explanation you get about CDOs and credit default swaps and so on. It was way worse than all that. But that whole mess is another show, too. But I just wanted to say, like, government was backing Epstein, the U.S. government and the U.S. banks, and then later the Israelis. Like, he always had a big daddy that got him out of trouble, and that happened again the first time he got caught.
Yeah,
he didn't really go to prison, you know, like. So
and what's his name, the guy who was the energy secretary who just stepped down, blanking on his
name. Acosta got the blame for that, but Barry Kirshner gave him the deal.
But it didn't it came from intelligence that was basically like, let this guy go easy on him, and he was kind of like, oh well, I was just doing kind of what I was told. And then of course, like, if the corporate press wasn't just completely useless, wouldn't that piece of information alone just warrant like a ton of investigative reporting? You go, oh wait, well, who the hell was that? Who where did you get this from? And no one seems to be interested in these follow-up questions. And then, of course, as we all saw, and anyone can understand, that chick at ABC News who was like, yeah, we had this story years ago, and they squashed it. Yeah. So it's really just so much about that story is just so obviously like this.
Well, it's his sponsors, you know, Les Wexner. We've had witnesses come forward now saying that Dershowitz and others raped young women in Wexner properties and were held there by his private security guards. This is a billionaire who's also been accused, by the way, of sexual harassment by seven of his own employees. But Wexner and Michael Steinhardt and Charles and Edgar Brofman Sr., with some other people, created something called the Mega Group, which is short for mega donors. It's a Zionist think tank made of who's who of the craziest of the crazy and the Zionist cliques. And their whole idea was to sponsor, and whether it was hook or crook, bribery, blackmail, whatever it took, to get lucrative real estate deals and to push Israeli interests in the United States. And so Epstein having a house given to him by Leslie Wexner and setting up the Wexner Foundation, where the two of them illegally financed Ehud Barak, who was the head of the Mossad at the time and later became the prime minister of Israel, is beyond suspicious. They had the Cardi Group, the same thing, another money laundering front where they were giving money to Israel. And then Barak's the guy that introduced Blackstone to Harvey Weinstein, who's, you know, on trial for raping multiple women. Former Mossad agents that go around and harass the victims of rape. And it gets worse and worse. You get into George Steinhardt and Ari Scher and these child raping rings in Brazil. There's a long story. And with enough time, I can walk through it all. I've made like maps about this stuff. But what you're hearing on the Three Letter Networks is basically just been reduced to Ghislaine Maxwell, Jean-Luc Brunel, and Prince Andrew. And nobody else, not the Dubins, not nothing, you know, and Dershowitz maybe, but it's like a five-person ring. I'm like, oh no, it's way bigger than that. And
right.
Way
well,
worse
they'll kind of throw, they'll maybe even throw Bill Clinton in because it's kind of like, well, we all knew Bill Clinton was kind of a creep, and he's kind of gone, and the Clintons are out of power now. So
there's
we'll
pictures
kind
of him with Trump, and Bill Clinton was on the airplanes or something like that. Like,
right.
Hey, Bill Clinton and Hillary gave pardons to Mark Rich and Pincus Green, who are already caught in child trafficking and own Glencore and, you know, all this exploitation of African copper mines in Zambia. And it's the list of crimes from the Clintons is too much. I can't even memorize it all. Overwhelming.
I saw a meme. I think it was, I might be getting this a little bit wrong, but it really made me laugh. But it was like a meme on Twitter that I saw where they said, they go, who would have thought that Pizzagate would age better than the Russia collusion hoax? And like, it's just like, yeah. It really is like, you look back at Pizzagate and how outraged they got about that. And you're like, well, look, even if they weren't like completely on and maybe some people said some things that weren't exactly true, you're like,
hey, Prince Andrew did go to Express Pizza.
Yeah. Like there does seem like there's something there.
What they often do. Well, it is and isn't like what they often do as a form. This is like Operation Mockingbird stuff combined with MK Naomi, which is a little different than MK Ultra. And what you think you know about MK Ultra is probably the Jonestown weirdo version, but there is a real version with George White and all these things. And Lee put a pin in that. But what Pizzagate was saying is like there are things like that, the Finders cult, the Man to Man, the Dream Boys, the Franklin scandal, that there are things like that with real child trafficking and all this really weirdo stuff, killing goats and all that, people with red shoes. But what they did is they put out a story that was false, saying, oh, look, the Podestas are in Spain or whatever. And it's actually just a police sketch, two sketches of one guy, not the two brothers. So it's easily debunkable stuff. So they go, oh, that's nonsense, right? But even though that is, and Pizzagate was false, things like that actually are happening all the time. I did a video of all the government agencies involved in child rape, and it's just pick something. The National Park Service, the BIA, the FBI, the CIA, like they all do it. The DOD and DynCorp, you probably know that one, pretty famous, like raping our own military personnel and drugging women. And it's gross. And child trafficking is a multi-billion, well, human trafficking is a multi-billion dollar business. I don't know how much of that is kids versus it's mostly women in the sex trade, But you're talking about multiple billions of dollars, and absolutely the government's involved in all that.
Yeah, well, look,
I mean, there are countries that didn't have laws against it until the 2000s.
Yeah, look, look, man. I mean, I've looked into some of this stuff. Obviously, you know this stuff a lot better than I do. But what I've always been saying for years is that you just got to go, like, when you really start, you know, to use that term that you use that I hate using as well, but when you start getting woke about the true evil nature of the state and what they do, like, to bring it back to that Madeleine Albright quote that you mentioned earlier, when you're who can just straight up say, with no hesitation, nothing, there, she's presented with the 500,000 children have starved to death. And she goes, yeah, well, we think that.
And that was in 97.
This is pre-9/11.
There was 6 more years of sanctions after that, right?
That's right. And this is pre-9/11. Yeah. It's not even like, oh, there was this, the justification for this whole war.
Iraq's not a threat to America.
No, you couldn't even argue. It was like they were a threat of like to retaliate to slant drilling by Kuwait. There's no plausible justification for this.
Which we actually gave them the okay to do.
Right, like, right.
Or to go against Kuwait.
That stuff I have read a lot about. And yeah, the whole first Persian Gulf War was such a sham. But it's like, if you, like, you got to step back. It's just, as a human being, you're like, who is that person? Like, what type of person is just okay with hundreds of thousands of children dying? Do you think, like, who is that? Who's around her?
And they took the babies out of the incubators, and they took them out and they threw them on the cold floor. Yeah. Oh, those poor babies. What about the 500,000 children? Oh, well, they're not on incubators, so.
No, dude, but one of my favorite things was Tom Woods, who's like one of my favorite people on the planet, and
that was a justification for Gulf War One, by the way. It was a speech by Nair, coached by Hill and Knowlton. It was a complete farce.
Yes, that's right. You can find
Tom Woods.
On YouTube. It was a hell of a performance, though, that she gave. Give her credit for that. Great acting.
I was a little kid watching that, and I just thought, she's 15. She has no accent. She speaks perfect English. I think this is BS.
Yeah. Well, look, you were onto it quick, because a lot of other people bought it. So Tom Woods was like a standard kind of Republican guy. And that war is what turned him into an anti-war, like, libertarian leaning guy. I mean, he found libertarianism later, but that war, I think, turned him against the warfare state. But he did this thing when he was talking about it, where he was like, even as they're telling you that as Saddam Hussein's army is invading Kuwait, they're stopping at the hospitals to take babies out of incubators. He was like, even if there was a group of people who were this evil, doesn't that just seem like not a practical plan when you're invading a country? Like, you're invading a country. And quick, we got to stop off at the hospital to just take babies out of incubators. Like, the whole thing just seemed, it's so obviously bullshit, but people buy
into this stuff. It's atrocity propaganda. They're killing babies, gassing babies, like Syria was accused of doing, mm-hmm. and babies on incubators and babies in ovens and all this stuff you hear. Like, Tom Lantos championed that war, the Gulf War, and he knew the original OSS propaganda from C.D. Jackson and the rest of them that came out of World War II. And, you know, I'm one of these guys that goes around and tries to debunk nonsense, even in real events, whether it's 9/11, World War II, the Civil War, whatever. I'll get real unpopular. You know, I'm like, no, the Civil War was not about freeing the slaves. And then they're like, what? Lincoln was a hero. I'm just telling you the evidence, man. And so, with Gulf War I, though, I would say this. If you look at the level of support that war had, because that was pre-internet completely, versus the second Iraq War, the second Iraq War had millions of people protesting around the globe before it started. The problem is, people are obsessed with what they've been taught. Like, they're in love with seeing the hippies of Vietnam, like, with signs and stuff, and they think that's why we got out of Vietnam. We didn't get out of Vietnam. We stayed in there for 9 years. That sort of theatrical resistance is almost useless. Like, the grown-up thing to do, which people died to give you the right to do, is to call or go to Congress, make a meeting, and talk to them. But the only ones doing that are corporate lobbyists, but you can do that. That's how we got the 28 pages released for the infamous 28 pages on the Saudi Arabian role in 9/11. Yeah. It's, you know, it straight up showed that Prince bin Turkfasil and Bandar Bush, through intermediaries Omar Bayoumi and Hassan Basnan, helped finance two actually three, but two 9/11 hijackers. And there's other evidence that shows the third one, but I don't feel like explaining. So you had Khaled Al-Mihdhar and Awif al-Hazmi directly financed by a state power. Those papers sat redacted for over a decade. I flew from Japan to Washington, D.C. and lobbied constantly to get those released, and they were. I mean, and I realized, man, why don't we do more of that?
Yeah.
Why don't we have the anti-AIPAC and the anti-all this stuff and just go in? Ron Paul had it down. He said lobbyists never came to see me because he wouldn't give them money. So they just quit going to him.
Yeah.
Don't blame the lobbyists. Blame the state.
I love that I could have, like, I can just imagine in my head, because this was like a thing that became known about Ron Paul, that he was the only congressman who the lobbyists just stopped going to because they just knew. But you can imagine when Ron Paul first got into Congress and, like, the first few times that lobbyists went to him and he was like, well, Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution doesn't give me the authority to blah, blah, blah. And they're like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? Like, what? They're like, dude, are you new around here? And then they'd be like, we'll try him again, like, in a few weeks. And, like, at a
certain point,
he was
only in there because the representative in his state died. And so, you know, it's just like 98% or something like that incumbents get reelected. So because there was a death, and Ron Paul, he's a Republican, he's a medical doctor, he had all the good optics, and we got like a real person in Congress for once, right? And
here's a big part of it,
giving
right?
You money?
So he was in like Lake Jackson or whatever his district in Texas was. It's like a small little district.
Galveston,
and, it's this little district in Texas. He was a baby doctor who had delivered like 3,000 babies. So if you think about the thousands of babies he had delivered like one out of every four persons in that town's baby or niece or grandson or something like that.
Parents and their kids can vote for him.
That's right. But then when they would go they'd be like, Ron Paul's a libertarian. He wants to end the war on drugs. He wants to legalize heroin. They'd be like, Dr. Paul? Nah, I think he's cool. Yeah. So he was able to get out of all the like kind of normal libertarian pitfalls that you would have just because people knew him in the community and were like, no, he's like, and if you've ever met Ron Paul, he's just like the greatest human being. Like he's everything he is on TV. He's just this.
People
sweet,
say, yeah, he's just like you see him.
Literally, exactly the same guy. He is that guy. And so it was just like people just weren't buying it when they would try. He really, unfortunately, it was like an aligning of the stars, like just the perfect guy in the perfect district where he could actually make it happen. I just want to.
I think he's a living philosopher. I think he. You know, I know there are other libertarians that are just as philosophically sound or whatever, but he's the one that got that spread that message to more people than all these intellectuals, you know, Hayek and the whole Mises Institute, all of them combined. Like Ron Paul reached more people, like
absolutely.
Not by himself, but that movement, it just hit and exploded with the youth. And talking about his rebuttal to Giuliani, which you brought up in the beginning of the conversation, it was like the following day you realize that. Oh, and Ron Paul got more donations from the U.S. military than all the other Republican candidates put together.
That was a big moment in terms of breaking the paradigm that we lived under. And I'll tell you that now it's like it's really
funny.
They
said racist newsletters.
Oh, yeah, of course. Right. That's right. Because some other people wrote some questionable things 30 years ago. But you know what?
When the same guy smearing me right now is saying Ron Paul's a racist and calling me a Jew hater and all that
dude. Of course. Right. Exactly. It's always just the worst.
He's ridiculous
people.
Clown. But, he's got like blue paint on his face and stuff.
Oh, God. Oh, Jesus. The
Smurf
we
people
live in.
Or something.
Yeah. Well, but I'll tell you, there's something about Ron Paul that I was thinking about this. In terms of Ron Paul's legacy recently when, you know, I was reading some article where they were bashing Tulsi Gabbard and they were saying that right-wingers are supporting Tulsi Gabbard. So this was the big hit on her. It's all these right-wingers who are actually interested in Tulsi Gabbard. And you're like, well, what is it that the right-wingers, quote-unquote, like about Tulsi Gabbard? Because there's only one thing that we like about her. It's not
Green
New Deal.
Ooh.
Well, right, but I'm saying right. it's for one specific reason. It's because she opposes most of these wars. And why is being anti-war all of a sudden considered?
She's against the war, and she's against all these what she calls regime change wars for my brothers and sisters.
Right,
but, you know, you just say I'm anti-war, but She's against regime change wars for her brothers and sisters. She's against aiding Al-Qaeda. She's one of the only candidates to actually go. She said, this is so funny. She went on with Steve Colbert and said, yeah, well, in 2011, the CIA was arming Al-Qaeda. Right? That's a congresswoman admitting that our government aided Al-Qaeda. And Stephen had nothing to say, just, you know, just went after, but you met Assad, you know, that kind of stuff. But another reason I think they like her is she's the only one grown up on immigration. She's like, no, we should not give free health care to illegals.
Yes. Yeah. No,
you should not be a radical position, right? Like, I think that's part of it too. But it's mostly that, yeah, she doesn't want to go start these wars. But I would say a lot of the like far right are not opposed to the wars because they have sympathy for people in Syria and Iraq and Libya. They just don't like the resulting refugees going to Europe.
No, I agree.
But I'll still take that as a win. I'm like, hey, if you're anti-war.
Well, no, look, and they also look, I agree with you. I'll take it. It's better than being pro-war by a million miles.
But it's also the fact
that they feel like Israel is like duping us into these wars and American boys go and die to do Israel's fighting for them.
Show me the lie.
No, listen, I think there is a lot of truth to that. That being said, even if that is the case, the main reason why I'm against the wars is because of the innocent people slaughtered in those countries. But there it is. But what animates the far right about the wars, what gets them more upset about it, is the Israel angle and the refugee angle. But like you said,
They say the Jews, not Israel.
Yeah.
But
it's not.
I think it's refugees.
It's not,
I think some of them also just don't want to kill people. You know, I think that it's a little bit of all that. But there are people on the left that are just like Bernie Sanders saying Assad must go. Right. Like, everyone should look up Bernie Sanders to the woodshed. If you're one of these people, because I feel like a lot, it's weird. There are a lot of Bernie supporters, just like there were a lot of Obama supporters who were generally anti-war, and like they sort of bestow this image onto the person that doesn't match their record or reality whatsoever. It's kind of like whatever is psychologically gratifying. Obama would say, I'm for hope and change. I'm like, oh yeah, here's the changes and hope I want. I want to end these wars. I want to do this. And of course, he just started new ones, right? Bernie Sanders he supported every war from Kosovo to Syria, with the exception of the second Iraq war, which he still voted to finance three times, you know?
Right.
Drone strikes, he was for that when Obama did it. He's only been against it when Trump did it. He turned on Saudi Arabia, not because of the war in Yemen. He had 7 years to open his mouth and didn't say anything. It's when they bought weapons from Russia that then they decided, oh, you're bad, right? A full-on Russia gator, all that. And so it's this weird, I don't know what to call it. It's something really strange that there are people who are generally looking for an anti-war candidate, don't latch on to the actual ones, and then sort of project all that image onto someone that doesn't match what they're saying at all.
Yeah. Now
they did it with Bernie, and they did it with Obama.
Well, and it happens in with politics in general. I mean, on different issues, it happens with Trump too. When people say he's playing 4D chess or like some of this other stuff.
Yeah, Trump's gonna stop censorship online, and he's gonna tackle immigration.
Like, and it'll be it won't even be like in some issues. It won't even be what he's saying. I mean, I've heard people who believe in free trade saying he's just using the tariffs to get more free trade and like all these other things. You're like, that's not even what he's saying he's doing. Anyway, listen, we got to wrap up because I'm over time and I got
to. We just need people to make better deals. That's right.
Oh,
man, everyone needs to hear libertarianism better.
Yeah, we need very smart people to make very good deals.
Tremendous and huge.
I really, really enjoyed this conversation. We're going to have to do this again if you're willing to, because we got. I'm sure there's a lot more stuff that we could talk about. I know people have
been
asking.
Let's do a show just on the Epstein stuff.
All right, 100%.
People ask me to go on your show too. I'm like, I will. I'm fine with that. How do I reach them? You know.
All right. Well, I'm glad we connected.
I just got you on Twitter.
All right. I'm glad we were able to connect and let people know if they want to check out more of your stuff, where you're still allowed to be, or where they can go look you up.
Really. I have a YouTube, but it's sort of like 98% self-censored right now because I don't want to risk losing it. But ANC Report, it stands for Anti-Neocons. And right now we're making a film about the NUMEC affair in Apollo, Pennsylvania, where uranium was stolen from the United States to build nuclear bombs overseas. So we're working on that film if you want to pitch in, and you can get all the daily stories, although tomorrow or the next day I probably won't update. I unfortunately have a family issue to go deal with in the United States, but Yep, ancreport.com's got all the links, and I really appreciate you having me on the show, and I'd love to come back once we're all sorted out. And happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. We'll definitely do it again. Happy Thanksgiving to you and to everybody listening. All right, that's our show for today. Thanks, guys. Enjoy your holidays, and we'll be back on Friday. We got Michael Heiss from the Libertarian Party Mises Caucus coming on Friday, so that should be a fun show. All right, have a good one. Peace.